I'm trying this with a new pair of glasses, so hopefully this will work today. Right, so let me start off with saying, in summary, we're clearly disappointed with this year's operational performance, with weaker results in our U.S. businesses outweighing the better results in the U.K. However, the reduction in U.S. tax rates and control of our interest cost means adjusted EPS remains stable. And we've generated strong cash flow, allowing us to reduce leverage, and the bond refinancing strengthens the balance sheet further. The impact of some of the challenges we've faced has required us to take some large one-off charges this year, and by this I'm referring to Greyhound and also TPE. I'll give you some further detail on this as we go through each business. But overall, we remain a business with operational resilience and one that's expecting to deliver stable performance next year and that will continue to generate significant cash in the coming years. So let me take you through the financials and provide you with some more color on the headlines. Overall, revenue grew by 13%, but if we take out the mid-year introduction of Southwest Railway, as well as the 53rd week seen in our road divisions, at constant currency, the business grew by 1%. Operating profit fell by 10% on the same basis, which is clearly a disappointing result. We did deliver, though, £317 million of adjusted operating profit. The U.S. divisions performed poorly, with Greyhound facing particular challenges in its long-haul market, and rail performance was resilient, and First Bus performed well, returning to passenger revenue growth and improving margins by 140 basis points to 5.7%. Interest cost has fallen by £12 million this year, with approximately half of that reduction driven by lower financing costs and the other half from a lower notional interest charge from our insurance liabilities. The tax rate reduced by 360 basis points to 22.4% following U.S. tax reform and also the lower weighting of U.S. profits. Adjusted attributable profit after tax, interest and non-controlling interest fell by 1%, and this flowed through to a largely flat EPS. On the cash front, we delivered in line with our expectations with total inflow of nearly £200 million, which was £111 million before the working capital inflow from Southwestern Railway. Another strong cash performance. Net debt reduced to £1.1 billion, and as a consequence of our strong cash generation and the Southwestern Railway working capital, reported leverage has reduced to 1.5 times net debt to EBITDA. Moving on to our revenue bridge, I'm going to run through each of the divisions on the coming slides, but first, just let me set out the key points. Moving from left to right, you can see that currency reduces revenue by approximately 1%. We then show divisional performance before the impact of the 53rd week, with students slightly down, transit up 2.4%, Greyhound down 1%, bus just positive, and rail up 4% without Southwest Railways. This gives growth of around 1% at constant currency and before the impact of the 53rd week. And then you can see the impact of Southwest Railway, the 53rd week, showing overall revenue up 14% on a constant currency basis. Turning to operating profit performance, you can see that this fell by 6.5%, or 4% on a constant currency basis, but 10% when the impact of Southwest Rail in the 53rd week is excluded. Divisional operating profit performance reflects the poorer performance in the U.S., outweighed by the stronger performance in the U.K. But let's go through that in a more detailed basis on a divisional, division-by-division basis. And I'll start with First Student. Revenue was down 1.1% in constant currency prior to the impact of the 53rd week, with the positive benefits of our contract pricing strategy offset by continued impact of reducing the bus fleet through our up or out strategy and fewer school operating days. We continue to maintain our contract pricing discipline, and retention rates increased to 83%. This was positive versus the prior year, but slightly lower than our expectations due to lost business primarily in Canada. Across the whole of the portfolio, retention has been 94%. On at-risk contracts, we achieved price increases of 5.3% in line with our expectations. Students' operating performance was not where we wanted it to be, given the progress we made in the prior year, with margins falling from 9.6% to 9% in local currency. Pricing did deliver margin improvement, and that, combined with $13 million of management initiatives, was sufficient to offset the impact of higher driver shortages, which continues to be an issue in the transport sector in North America. However, a worse second half weather impact than last year and slightly lower retention than expected reduced the margin overall. Moving on to how we view the coming year, we've learned our lessons from retention last year and have taken an even more focused approach this year. And as a result, we feel more confident about the coming year's retention levels and are currently seeing rates well in excess of last year's, with pricing at similar levels. Clearly, it is important that we see pricing at levels higher than inflation so as to counteract the driver wage inflation. This continues to remain a challenge, and we're seeing the issue of driver costs and shortages affecting all transportation, trucking, and distribution companies across North America. And we're working hard to improve our processes to keep on top of this issue and are reflecting wage pressures in our renewal negotiations and bid models. Going forward, we see ourselves moving towards a position where the bus fleet numbers are stable after a number of years where the bus numbers have declined as a result of our up or out strategy. We're also seeking to grow through small bolt-on acquisitions, the pipeline for which we're looking to develop. We'll continue to increase the uptake of our best-in-class app, which is called First View, and enables parents to track their children on the buses and know exactly when the buses will arrive. And we'll also begin to develop a range of managed services for our customer base to further leverage our position as the preferred and trusted supplier to this industry. And from a margin perspective, there is further scope to grind out more cost savings, and I expect that margins can be brought back to around last year's level. And this would reaffirm us as generating industry-leading margins befitting our position as the market leader in the sector. Moving on to First Transit. The business grew again this year with 2.4% constant currency growth, and this was despite the continued low level of activity in the Canadian oil sands area and the loss of two larger poor-performing contracts that we referenced at the half year. This was more than offset by winning 33 new contracts, including some major paratransit and fixed route contracts in Los Angeles and Vancouver, as well as the impact of inflationary increases built into our contracts. Now, you'll recall that at the half year, profitability was affected by increased driver costs, as well as the impact of hurricanes, particularly in Puerto Rico. At that time, we predicted the business would deliver 7% margins for the second half, as it strove to improve contract performance. And this is what the business delivered, despite continued driver shortage pressure in certain areas. Contract performance did improve, as did the situation in Puerto Rico, albeit with higher employee medical costs affecting the business in the second half. We talked before about the reduced activity in the Canadian oil sands region, and going forward, we will need to work hard to overcome the loss of two contracts in that region worth around $40 million. This was a high-margin business, and so our expectations for margin for this division next year will have to reflect that. We continue to maintain our leadership position in our existing markets and look to develop new growth markets. We've now undertaken six autonomous vehicle trials, most notably at this year's Super Bowl in Minneapolis. In addition, we're partnering with ride-sharing companies to win business in Disability Act-compliant transportation. Despite showing 1.2% growth in the first half, Greyhound ended the year 0.7% down, reflecting a decline of 2.7% in the second half. Although our point-to-point express business continues to grow and was up 7.7% in the year, this has not been sufficient to offset the reduction in long-haul revenue. As referenced in our Q3 update, the market has moved, with increased capacity in the ultra-low-cost airline space affecting demand on our long-haul routes. And we continue to see reduced revenue along the southern borders, as a result of tougher immigration control in this area. The reduced revenue in the second half has effectively dropped through to the bottom line, with minimal opportunities to reduce the cost base in the short term. In addition, maintenance costs have increased as the fleet has aged, and driver training and recruitment costs have increased in this business. Trading in Canada remains challenging, with losses of $10 million incurred. But we've now been given approval to withdraw from certain routes in British Columbia, and we continue to actively examine options to further reduce the losses being incurred. Now, I said that I returned to the subject of larger one-off charges being made this year, and as you're aware, we're required to assess the value of goodwill and other assets on our balance sheet. Looking ahead, whilst we continue to improve our service offering and are increasing the use of our yield management tools across the whole network, we have not yet seen any significant impact on demand from the recent uptick in oil prices, and are not seeing any letup in the long-haul market competition from ultra-low-cost carriers. As a result, we've taken the decision to write down the goodwill and other assets in Greyhound this year, and the value of this adjustment is £277 million. Now, whilst at a headline level this is disappointing, I'd emphasize that this is a non-cash item. And you should not take this as us having given up the fight with this business. We have a number of plans to improve our performance levels, including the continued reduction of routes in Canada and also pursuing partnership opportunities in the outer reaches of our network. However, in the light of current market conditions, where sustaining Greyhound performance will be a challenge, we have appointed an external consultant to help us perform a wide-ranging business and strategy review of Greyhound. This will cover a variety of issues and options, and we expect to be able to update you at the half-year stage on this. Moving on to UK Bus. I mean, trading in First Bus has been a bright spot, with like-for-like passenger revenue growth of 1.1%. The business continues to operate in a challenging marketplace with reduced high street footfall, lower motoring costs supporting a modal shift to cars, and also congestion. And we continue to see a wide variation of performance across the country, with revenue affected by very local issues. However, encouragingly, revenue grew in each quarter of the year as the impact of our digital, contactless payment, and local market strategies begin to bear fruit. Profitability has also moved forward, with operating profit growing by 35% to £50 million, and margins up 140 basis points. Not only have we seen an improvement in revenue growth, we've also put in place additional plans to reduce costs from the business. And this has resulted in more than £20 million of profit improvement from a combination of network rationalization, pricing, depot restructuring, and more efficient working practices. We've recently announced plans to move a variety of administrative functions to Central Shared Service Center and have begun to modernize older working practices through renegotiating terms and conditions. And I'd expect this activity to continue in the coming year, driving margins further forward. Looking ahead, the commercial offering of the business has been radically improved with the installation of contactless payment card readers on 80% of our fleet. We'll have completed the rollout by July and will become the first national bus company to do so. And this will improve the simplicity and convenience to our customers and reflects our strategy of taking cash off the bus for a number of reasons, including improving the journey speeds. Our digital strategy continues to progress with higher uptake of mobile and electronic tickets in many of our regions. Now, whilst revenue was affected by severe weather in March when entire cities such as Glasgow ground to a halt, and the change in Easter timing, we're starting to see a reversion to last year's growth rates in recent weeks. Finally, we continue to focus our investment in customer service improvements and fleet to regions that genuinely offer a partnership to deliver more reliable bus services, areas such as Leeds and Bristol. And it's this approach that's allowed the division to generate cash for the first time in a number of years. Moving on to rail. Headline revenue has increased by 55% as a result of the introduction of the South Western Railway franchise in August 2017. On a like-for-like basis, passenger revenue grew by 4.1% in the year. The entire rail industry is affected by a slowdown in passenger growth, and we are no exception. Great Western continues to be affected by high levels of engineering works across the route, but has improved its performance over last year, up 2.7%, due to the introduction of the Hitachi Intercity Express trains. TransPennon Express continues to drive industry-leading growth at 10%, demonstrating the level of demand for services in that region. And the business saw a varied operating performance this year, with Great Western generating slightly lower margins than prior years, and the new South Western Railway franchise was introduced in August 2017 and generated a profit this year. TransPennon Express generated a loss of £7 million in the year as revenue is not growing in line with our original plans. However, overall, the rail division has contributed significantly to group performance, generating £58 million of profit, up up 7% versus prior year. So coming back to the TransPennon Express contract in more detail. As I said, although the franchise is generating industry-leading growth, this wasn't sufficient to meet the estimate set out in the bid, and so we lost money this year, £7 million. And this is largely due to the lower growth rates experienced by the industry as a whole. Now, we've assessed the future growth rates required from the franchise to meet its objectives, along with the current losses, Although significant capacity and growth will be generated from the franchise over the remaining life, we believe that we'll fall short of the bid target over the remaining five-year period. If revenue is generated at the rate set out in our current forecast, then our best estimate is that losses of £106 million will be generated over the coming 5 years. And I want to re-emphasize that despite the potential for making losses from this franchise, we remain committed to delivering our plans over the term of the franchise, including the new capacity and services that will make this railway and the communities it serves a success over the coming years. So looking at our other TOCs, Great Western continues to be affected by the ongoing engineering and electrification works, but we're pleased that the option to extend the franchise to 2020 has been exercised. And we also have the opportunity to negotiate a new contract of 2 plus 2 years for the franchise. And this demonstrates the excellent stakeholder relationships that we've developed over the years and the success we've had in introducing new fleet to this franchise. The startup of South Western Railway was as difficult as we anticipated, given that we took over during the Waterloo upgrade project. However, we're also experiencing further infrastructure challenges along the route. But we are starting to see improvements to performance and are looking forward to beginning the process of adding significant capacity to this railway over the coming years. Going forward, we expect margins to trend downward in line with the industry and will continue to play our part in delivering the largest investment in capacity in the market for many years. So given the major adjusting items discussed in the previous slides, I thought it'd be useful to summarize where we are on one page. Now, I won't talk about amortization, that always gets pulled out separately, or go over Greyhound or TPE again, but we do have a number of other adjusting items. As discussed last year, the cost improvement program at UK Bus required one-off costs to achieve, and around £21 million of costs have been adjusted out of ordinary profit. In addition, we provided £5 million of closure costs that have arisen from the loss of the two large contracts in Fort McMurray. We've then provided £33 million to account for deterioration in a small number of North American insurance claims that relate to prior years, and in particular the 15 and 16 years. And finally, we pulled out the cost of the bond make-whole costs that will deliver us £14 million of lower interest costs next year. So having explained the adjustments, I'll now take you through the bottom half of the P&L. Interest costs are around £12 million lower than last year at £120 million, and approximately half this reduction was driven by lower financing costs and half from lower notional interest charge from our insurance liabilities. Going into next year, we'd expect interest costs to fall to £106 million as a result of the £14 million savings we've flagged arising from our refinancing earlier in the year. The tax rate reduced by 360 basis points to 22.4%, and clearly this has been driven by the US tax reform, driving federal tax rates down to 21% from 35% as a result of the US tax reform, and also the lower weighting of US profits this year. We expect the natural level of tax to level off between 24 to 25% going forward, but for next year we expect the tax rate to be around 23%. As a reminder, cash tax remains low, costing us £12 million this year, and this is likely to be a similar number next year. Non-controlling interest costs increased this year, moving to £5 million, and this increase is driven by the new South Western Railway franchise and NTR's 30% interest in that business. So taking all of the above into account, EPS was largely flat and up 3% in constant currency. So before I look at overall cash flow, I'd like to spend some time looking at capital expenditure. We've continued to invest in the business during the year, and the spend is heavily weighted towards our fleet, as well as continuing investment in upgrading our IT systems. Cash CapEx spend for the year, excluding the rail business, or as we now refer to it, the road business, is £300 million, approximately £20 million below last year. And this is in line with the guidance we gave you last year and reflects continued tight capital management and efficient cascading of older buses. The lower spend this year also reflects lower investment in the first bus businesses. Our focus does remain on capital allocation and ensuring we drive appropriate growth and returns from the invested capital. The student business continues to consume the most capital, and capital levels were maintained at similar levels to last year through continued discipline around the cascade process. Spend in first bus reduced as expected as we took back control of our spend post disability act compliance. and Greyhound recommenced investment in its buses after 3 years of reduced investment. Looking forward, we expect cash capex from our road divisions to increase to around £350 to £360 million as retention rates in student increase, as well as some investment in transit where some specific shuttle contracts are up for renewal. And this is before any small bolt-on acquisitions are made. As you know, we exclude rail from this discussion since the cost is largely funded and so is cash net neutral over time. This can move significantly dependent on bid commitments, new projects, and also timing. And you'll recall that we flagged higher spend in rail last year, and the spend was nearly £50 million higher than last year. As a result of continued depot redevelopment, station improvements, and the new South Western Rail franchise, we expect rail gross capex to be significantly higher, and although these will largely be cash neutral, you could see as much as £200 million of funded capex in addition with this division. Clearly, as ever with rail, this is subject to the timing of significant projects. So now, let me walk you through the cash flow performance for the year. Overall, net cash inflow was £199 million, £52 million better than last year. £89 million of this cash came from the working capital inflow from the South Western Rail franchise, leaving us with a net cash inflow of £111 million. Operating cash flow of £296 million was generated, a conversion rate of 93%, up from 89% last year. As you can see, the bulk of our operating cash flow is generated by the EBITDA less capex. There's been minimal change from our insurance provision movement, and the working capital was positively impacted by timing on rail receipts and payments, offset by the minority buyout of a student acquisition made in 2014, plus some cash restructuring costs. Pension contributions in excess of the P&L charge were £10 million higher than last year, and cash interest is around £20 million higher, largely due to the cash cost of paying back the bond early. Overall, this leaves us with £111 million of net cash inflow, and this performance, and the basis behind it, is very much in line with what we set out last year. So looking forward, taking account of capital requirements and trading performance, we continue to see the business being able to generate cash in the coming year. Our overall financial position has improved again this year and remains strong, with headroom under our committed facilities and free cash at £800 million. As I mentioned earlier, reported net debt to EBITDA ratio fell from 1.9 times to 1.5 times. We're conscious that some of this reduction came from the additional ring-fence cash from Southwestern Rail, and when we remove this, the net debt to EBITDA fell from 2.3 times to 2.1 times. This year, we were able to begin the process of refinancing our expensive longer-term debt. After paying back $100 million of USPP debt in the first half, in February, we raised $275 million on the USPP market at an average rate of 4.25%. And this allowed us to repay the first of our expensive bonds before the year end. And we were very pleased to have been able to access this marketplace after a long absence, and that we were well supported and could obtain very competitive terms and conditions. Average debt maturity has logically risen to 4.1 years, and the rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Fitch, currently have us at BBB minus and stable, and their normal process to update this shortly after the publication of our results. And now that we've commenced the refinancing program, we can start to be more efficient with the balance sheet. The January bond of £250 million will be repaid using the existing RCF. We'll continue to apply discipline to cash and borrowing to minimize our interest charge. And for guidance purposes, you can assume that cash interest will be around £90 million next year. As a final point, you'll note that the pension deficit has reduced from £360 million to £270 million due to better asset returns and the impact of foreign exchange translation. As I mentioned at the half year, we've been successful in merging our UK local government pension schemes during the year, and our UK bus and group schemes closed to future accrual with effect from the 1st of April 2018. We continue to progress a variety of plans to reduce risk in this area in discussion with the workforce and trustees. But it is worth pointing out that the group pays around £50 million of deficit reduction payments a year as a result of the actuarial deficit valuation of its schemes. And as you know, the actuarial valuation differs from the accounting valuation. These payments and plans have been agreed with the trustees and the regulators, and in some cases are backed up by a parent company guarantee or letters of credit. Overall, we've continued to strengthen the balance sheet during the year despite the challenges faced by the business. Looking forward, we expect to generate substantial cash flow next year, and we believe that this cash is best used to further de-lever the group and for targeted growth within the business. We believe that our current approach delivers the best value for our shareholders overall. Before I close, I thought it would be worth and helpful to bring together some of the guidance we've peppered through the results. We expect road divisions to improve in the coming year, with student and bus driving that performance. Rail will still deliver a contribution, but at lower margins than last year, reflecting prevailing industry conditions. And note that the revenue for Transpan and Express will continue to be reported in our results, but the provision for future losses will be utilised in the coming year. And overall, we see operating profit as being stable next year. We continue to generate free cash after disciplined investment to support customer needs, and road cash capital investment will be approximately £350 to £360 million. Cash interest reduced to £90 million, and tax increases to 23%, and cash tax will be largely similar to this year. So let me close with a summary. It's been a difficult year for the group, but despite this, we've shown resilience by delivering £750 million in operating profit and in excess of £100 million in cash. The balance sheet's robust, and the financing of our expensive bonds has commenced. We have strong market positions, solid divisional plans, and there is further scope to improve both our commercial offering and our cost base going forward. And with that, I'll hand over to Wolfhart for his thoughts.
Thank you, Matthew, and good morning, everyone. Let me just summarize in two slides where the company stands and where we're going. If you look at that slide, you can break down our activities in different ways. From a financial perspective, it's really interesting, as Matthew did it, that you look at the road businesses. These are the green parts, and you see some of the financial criteria there on the left-hand side, and you can look at the rail business in yellow here. On the other hand, you could also break down in another way, and you know there are many different ways how you could do it strategically. That is, for example, looking what is the UK business, you see that here in that pink or red color, and what are US businesses. I think it's always interesting to keep that in mind and to keep also in mind what different businesses the different divisions are doing, be it, let's say, more long haul or short haul. Travel by bus or by rail. So what we have at the end with that is five market-leading public transportation businesses. Half of our revenues is coming from 1,400 contracts, and most of those contracts are with national or local authorities, and, you know, that gives you great stability. And we have a really great experience how to handle those bids and how then to operate those bids in a very effective way so that they create the return we want to see. With our leading positions in the markets in North America and the UK, we also can drive forward new ways of mobility. I will come back to that later. I think what we have not done that far, that we really created the value, the financial value, the returns out of our leading marketing positions, and that will be really a focus in the coming years. What also Matthew mentioned, but I think it's always important to say that because people are always saying, or if you read what people say, some people say about our balance sheet, net debt EBITDA reduced from 2014 from 2.2 to now this year, last financial year, to 1.5. And I think what is even more important, what happened to the free cash flow over the years, it steadily moved up every year from 27 million in 14 to now last year, if you take the rail cash out, to 110 million. And I think this is a great success story. It's slow, yes, but I think it shows that we're moving in the right direction in relation to the balance sheet and the cash generation. Let me see here. The next slide gives you a bit of an outlook. Sorry, it's changed already. The next slide gives you a bit of an outlook. Clearly, we're disappointed with this year's results. If you look at last financial year, I think everything looked quite positive for the further development, but it has not continued in that way as we had expected that. Tim O'Toole, who has been chief executive for nearly 8 years in the company, has thought that it's the right time to step down, and a search for his successor is underway. But in between, I think we have a strong management in our five divisions. We have Matthew, who is not only doing the role of a CFO, he's also will be active as COO, and let me put that, I think he has been active in that role already over some months or nearly last year ago, and some of the improvements in cost saving and operational results is directly linked to him. So the board, in addition, is clearly be in an ongoing strategy process all the time, but we have now an opportunity to look with a fresh pair of eyes into all options we have, and there are many, many, but it's important to really then take the ones which really create a real shareholder value and not do very short-term measures which at the end are not delivering the value which is inherent in the group. I just give you a few examples. Matthew mentioned a bit of that. We have an external strategic review of the Greyhound business. We have to see that I think there are a lot more opportunities in new customer groups than what we usually do. And to really evaluate the opportunities of that business, whatever decision we take then, what we might do with that business, I think it's important to have clear data on that. And we took one of the larger consulting companies to do that. And that will be concluded in the coming months. So not only at the new year, I think in summer we will know more about that, and then we will make a decision how we move on with that. We have, as Matthew mentioned, growth opportunities in student, where we have now the margins we want to see. The margin should come close to the 10%, but I think what is important with all the restructuring and operational efficiency, at the end, we have to get the top line going. And so we will push very hard in student to get a growth out there, because that would add a lot of value. And also, if you look into the business, transportation business, it's all about customer convenience. It's about connected mobility of the future. And we, as the leading company in those five sectors, we think we can really take a more leadership role in all of those things. You've heard about the contactless payment, for example, but that is only one example. We have to really have a vision what we will do in the future with more IT, with huge data available, and I don't see that in the very near future, let's say autonomous cars driving. You have to see what the whole change with discussions about diesel engines not having in cities. I think there will be big changes in that industry, and we are prepared for that, but we have to drive that really in the right direction. So we have considerable opportunity to create more shareholder value. The shareholder value, clearly overall, if you look at the share price, the returns has not increased in the way as we would like to have, and I think we really have to focus on that to do that also in the near-term future. Finally, we are here in a financial review, but we should not forget that the company has many, many stakeholders, not only shareholders. And I think as a public transportation companies, we also have to reflect those other stakeholders. These are our customers, and our customers want to have more convenience, and they want to know what is happening in their regions. A lot of our business is a very regional business, and they have to give, and we have to listen to them, the input, what we're doing in those different regions for them. And building, for example, an intercity network in the northern part here of England, I think that is also very, very important, is a role we should not forget when we talk about financial results, which clearly today are the most important aspect we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolfhart, Matthew. So if we could now open up to take your questions, please. Damien, I think you got there just first, and the microphone on its way to you.
Damien Burrow from Royal Bank of Canada. Three questions, please. First of all, on UK bus side, could you give us some idea of what the dispersion of the margin performance of the business looks like, both at the EBIT level, but I guess also more importantly, what the free cash flow margin dispersion of the business looks like, given the differential in CapEx between the regions? Secondly, on the pensions, last year, Matthew mentioned that, you know, this year expecting an increase in the differential between the P&L and the cash flow, and that's come through. Are we now at the peak of that, and is there any chance that could diminish in future? And thirdly, on South West Railway, in light of TransPennine, have you sort of re-reviewed the bid assumptions and the contract there? Is there anything that leaves you sort of more comfortable with your bid there, and how does the dead banding cope with the change in employment, travel to work patterns? Does that support it, or is that something where you're at risk? Thank you.
Sure. Well, let me take all of those. Okay. Look, Damien, I think we've been through this conversation in the past. We're not reluctant to talk about the dispersion of our UK bus profits. And also the capital does move around depending on, you know, how we want to cascade fleet around that business. What I would say is we continue to have some areas that are very good for us and some that aren't particularly good for us. Again, they're all making a contribution, and you, as you can expect, they've all moved forward this year. That's really all I'd say on that. In terms of the pension, I don't think we're necessarily at the peak. I don't think there's a huge amount that we'd expect to move either down or up on that. What I'd say is we have a split between our US and our UK pension schemes, and the way that you fund them are different. I think, you know, we're very comfortable with the agreements we've made in the UK, and that will, you know, those agreements will roll forward. I think in the US we may end up paying a little bit more going forward, but it's not something that's going to be a huge drag on the cash flow. Coming back to South Australia, of course we've looked at the performance of that business. We've looked at how it's performed over the 7 months that we've owned that in financial terms. Clearly, we've had a very difficult period. We had the Waterloo upgrade, which has totally disrupted performance, and then we've had further disruption on the infrastructure, which has caused real issues. So it's a little bit difficult. We don't really have a firm footing, but, you know, we knew about that going into the bid, so we knew that these things were coming up. I think all I'd say on that is that we've looked at it. It made a profit this year. You know, we're comfortable that this is a good franchise with better protection mechanisms than we've had in the past. And we're looking forward to adding capacity to the network.
Morning there. It's Sam Bland from JP Morgan. I've got two, please. Your road capex to depreciation has historically been about 1x roughly as an average. I think going forward this year it's going to be more like 1.2. Is that sort of, as maybe students start growing or at least becomes a bit more stable, is that 1.2x level, which is maybe a little bit more consistent with peers, kind of a new normal and it will be around that level on an ongoing basis, or is the sort of 360 million you alluded to kind of a peak and then it may drop back down a little bit more? And second question is, I noticed in Tim's statement he says he now kind of, this is a good time to clear the way and the chairman maybe has a new direction for the company. I don't know, is there any light you might be able to shed on that in terms of where there may be a different view going forwards on a couple of issues specifically versus the approach taken in the past? Thanks.
You take the first one and then perhaps Wolfhart, you could take the second.
So you're right, Sam. The future expectations of CapEx is going to be higher than the 1x depreciation. And we have always said that. It's always going to be 1.1 to 1.2 times. So from our, you know, as we would be very happy if student grows and, you know, we back that with investment. So for us, 1.2 times is within our, what we'd expect to be a normal range of CapEx. So we've had a couple of years of lower, so, you know, the ones for the last couple of years, but we'd expect this sort of 1.1, 1.2 times to be more normal going forward.
Second question. When you look what has been achieved, I think there will be no change in relation to that, and we will continue to drive cash and all the things which I showed are positive. Where we have to have and will have a constantly, and especially in those times, fresh eyes is what are the changes in the transportation industry? And that is really changing. And you see the example in Greyhound. In Greyhound, there was always a lot of time talking about, you know, fuel costs and other things and weather. But if you really look into that in more detail, it's been the budget airlines which were really competing with that. And we have other modes of transport evolving in many areas. I don't have to mention Uber. There are many other ways. Look into maybe some areas, even bicycles. You know, nobody's talking about it, but look into continental Europe, go to Amsterdam, then you see how transportation can work in a totally different way. I'm not saying that it's changing here in the UK in that direction, but I'm just saying I think we really have to look very actively forward, do the right steps, and for example, you see in the slides, nowadays you cannot do everything on your own. You might do some partnering in some activities we are doing to really be successful, to offer the convenience customers today expect. You know, I think it's no longer just customer service, it's customer convenience, and people today want to expect different things than how it was 10 years ago. And in relation to that, you see also the overall rate growth. You know, it's not the old assumptions you put in bids and when you talked about growth. They are changing, and the environment is changing, and with that we will also change our strategy. But that does not mean we do a drastic change now from the strategy the group had so far.
Morning, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. Matthew, can you tell us what the latest assumptions are in TransPennine now, please? Secondly, you've said that transit margins are going to come down. What are they going to come down to? Presumably you've got some visibility there now. And likewise, can you answer the same question for rail, where you said margins would trend down there? And finally, exceptional costs. What is your guidance for this year and indeed future?
Yes, of course. So in terms of the TransPennine, I don't want to get into too much detail on that, but what I'd say is that we're looking at revenue growth probably 1% down on where we'd expected. Because of the large increases that we're going to be putting through with the capacity, that obviously compounds over the five-year period. So that's what we're looking at there for TransPennine. In terms of transit, I mean, these Fort McMurray contracts were very good for us. You know, we go back 4 or 5 years, we're earning $140 million from Fort McMurray, and we're going to be down to sort of the $20 or $30 million from that area, and that's going to have a big dent. So I'd expect transit to be down sort of towards the 6% level. From a rail perspective, we're expecting margins to be in the sort of the mid ones. Maybe that's the kind of area we'd expect that to turn out at. And then for the exceptional costs, we're not planning anything significant at this point. There may be a little bit on bus, but actually we think we've got our plans sufficiently far progressed to have really sort of accounted for the what we want to do next year on bus. So we, you know, with the revenue coming through as it is, or the way that that's been growing, and the plans we put in place, we feel that it's largely all covered.
TransPennine, yeah. The phasing of the provision, you know, is that relatively evenly split?
What I'd say is over the next 3 to 4 years, you'd expect that sort of loss or cash cost to come through. I won't go into sort of every year, but you can sort of roughly spread it across the next 3 or 4 years. So it's not, what I say, it's not out there in year four, and it's not all going to happen next year. So I think I just said just a relatively smooth number there.
Uh, Morning, Jay Spina from Jefferies. Can you just remind us of where the parent company guarantees are on Trans Pennine Express? Have you started to pay into that? I guess where does 106 million take you to relative to those parent company guarantees? Additionally, can you just give us a sense about out of the £111 million of free cash flow that you're talking about, how much of that broadly came from the rail activities? And then just presumably, to follow on from Joe's questions around exceptionals, presumably there's a risk there in terms of whatever happens on the Greyhound outcome, further restructuring costs, et cetera, on that side as well. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me cover those ones off. So in terms of the TPE, we've got the parent company guarantees or parent company support of 189 million, of which half is bonded. Clearly, there's no cash outflow at that point. That just sits there as a legal commitment and obligation. The cash, we would just be expecting to pay out in cash as the loss of the crew over that period. So provided we're paying the cash from our money, then you don't technically call in those bonds or those guarantees. They just kind of sit there as protection. I think that will answer that question. In terms of the rail cash, I mean, we don't really get into a great deal of detail on the rail. I mean, clearly we've made profit. We largely expect that profit to turn into cash. We've had a little bit of upside from working capital timing, probably £20 to £30 million is roughly what we benefited from net in the rail business. But that's probably all I'd want to talk about at this point. And then you're right, absolutely right about Greyhound. The review is out there, but this is a root and branch review, and we're looking at every aspect of the commercial business, the operations of the business, how it's structured, the investments, everything. So I don't really want to sort of talk about what may come out of that until we just know what's going to happen. So we'll update people at the half year where we stand with that, and if there are any exceptional costs or impacts coming from that, then we'll let people know at that point. But I think it's a little bit premature to sort of even begin to start estimating what that could be.
Here we go. Morning, it's Alex Patterson from Investec. Two questions, please. Firstly, just on First Student, you were saying pricing trends for this year similar to last. Did you mean price increases similar to last, or the level of pricing? And secondly, just on Greyhound, could you talk about the overlap between Greyhound and Greyhound Express in terms of shared facilities, assets, that sort of thing? And is there, on the pension side, can you just remind us what, I think there's a pensions deficit at Greyhound. Is there a difference between what lies at Greyhound, Greyhound Express, US, Canada, that sort of thing, please?
Sure. Okay, so just to be clear on First Student, when we talk about pricing, I'm talking about the price increases on the at-risk contract, so sort of the same way as we define it for this year. For Greyhound, the network and the asset base serves all of our business. So this is part of the conundrum, in that we have a short haul passenger and a long haul passenger riding the same bus, going to the same terminals, being buying the same ticket. So it is all totally shared, and we're just sort of chopping up individual legs to sort of define what a short haul passenger is versus a long haul passenger. So this is what we're trying to work through. In terms of the pension, we do have a US pension deficit in the Greyhound business, and we also have our Canadian pension deficit as well in total, and that pretty much makes up, when you look at page 35 of the book, the 162 deficit that we've got in the States. But you wouldn't really be able to attribute that between sort of long haul or short haul types of passengers. It's just a US business and a Canadian business. I think we talked before about the pension liabilities in Canada, which whilst on a sort of valuation basis are not significant, because we put some letters of credit side to sort of help them sort of get comfortable about that. If there's significant change to the business, then that could crystallize some significant money there. So that's what we're working through on Canada to try and deal with that. Does that answer? Yeah, great.
Morning, Gerald Khoo from Liberum. A few questions. Starting on rail CapEx, did I hear correctly that you talked about in something in the region of 200 million in the new financial year? And on that point, you talked about that being funded. Where, over what time period is that funded? Is there going to be a mismatch in, say, the 200 million going out in the new year and then the recovery in later years? And where in the cash flow statement will that show up? Secondly, you talked about the contract losses in transit. Can you clarify whether that was just the opportunity disappearing, as in they weren't available, or is that a loss to a competitor? And finally, on the exceptional for U.S. insurance costs, how comfortable are you that you are providing the right amount going forwards for insurance and similar costs? Therefore, what implications are there for future profits and margins if that needs to be corrected?
Yeah, no, that's a good point there. So let me make sure I've got all of those. So in terms of the rail CapEx, largely that gets funded at the point of sort of incurring the CapEx. And sometimes if it's funded from a local authority or a county council or whatever, sometimes we get that money in advance. There can be some timing issues, but we're not expecting big timing issues. And the rail team are very good at managing their cash flow, so they know that they can't. We're not here to fund these things. Where it comes through the cash flow is quite difficult to say because it really depends whether it's a committed obligation, whether it's something that's been funded through the premium line, or whether it's an externally funded piece where it may come through working capital. I would say that ultimately we'd see most of it going through working capital, frankly. Sorry, say again. Well, so 200 million is, so what we're trying to flag up here is that the gross CapEx is a number that could look scary when you look at it. If you pull out the accounts next year and you're going to see 350-360 million of road CapEx, you add in 200 million, suddenly you're saying, "Oh, they're spending 550 million of CapEx." What we're just trying to flag it so that if you see it on a bit of paper, you're not shocked by it. What we're saying is that that will effectively be funded as it has been this year. So we've had sort of significant money going through this year as well. And we're relying on these rail people to, A, do the right contractual things to make sure we're legally obliged, legally get the money in advance, and B, they work their way through it and make sure they get the money. There can be some timing issues, but it's not, it's a very short-term issue. So coming on to transit, so those two contracts were competitively tendered and were lost as a result of the competitive tender. There was a, we felt that we went as low as we were prepared to go for those contracts, and someone else was prepared to go a lot lower. So we're, it's disappointing, but we're happy with the decision and the outcome there. The final point on insurance costs, yeah, good point. So we have, our insurance provision is made up of a swathe of thousands of relatively small claims, and then we get maybe 20, 30, 40 sort of bigger claims that might come through. What we've seen here is a deterioration on some of the bigger claims that we've had, whereas the rump of the sort of the smaller claims are still trending in the way that we've expected them to do. So as we stand today, we're seeing this as effectively a cluster of issues in those particular years. We're having to resolve that right now, but in terms of the swathe of the smaller claims, we're not seeing a general deterioration. But look, we do, we don't try and work this out ourselves. These things are actuarially valued. They work it all out for us. Yeah, of course, we get a few bumps and knocks as we get some settlements that are a little bit crazy when you look at the U.S. legal system. But with our Be Safe program, this thing is being well controlled, and we do this on an actuarial basis as well.
Joe Spooner from Jefferies again. Just another one on South West Rail. To what extent are the profits currently being underpinned by compensatory receipts from Network Rail? And I guess as a follow-on, is there a risk to franchise profits when the infrastructure gets sorted out and those payments come to an end? Thanks.
So we get compensated if the network's not available to us. The profit, you know, if we have things that go wrong with the network, we can't run the services, we lose the revenue, we get compensated. You know, over time, you know, if they resolve, we want, sorry, I should say, we want them to resolve these problems. We want them to improve the customer experience. We want people to see that the services are working, the trains are running on time, and they get back on the railways. So, you know, then, you know, there's always a tiny bit of a lag there, but in reality, you know, if they improve the performance of the infrastructure, people will get more confidence, they'll come back to the railway, and, you know, we'll all be happier about it. So I don't see any great sort of swing one way or the other there. But what I'm clear that we want the infrastructure to improve so that we can improve the performance of that railway.
Damian Brewer, RBC again. Can I come back to SWR first of all? Just to clarify, the deadbanding on that is due to GDP and Central London employment. Can you be clear that is there any protection against change in travel patterns within that franchise, particularly working from home on Fridays or maybe 2 days a week?
Under the contract, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's GDP and Central London employment. And, you know, we have made our assumptions and assessments of how we think travel patterns change. Yeah, so there's no specific protection there.
Just to be clear, the contingent equity there is about £80 million or so, and your share would be about £50 million.
That's right.
So that'd be the worst case circumstance.
Exactly right. So much better protection all round on that franchise.
Okay. And then a second sort of wider question. I mean, your shares are back down in the mid-90s again this morning. Could you explain why, as a board, you dismissed the Apollo bid so quickly? And if there was a future bid coming, would you equally dismiss it quickly, or what parameters would you look for that would allow you to entertain a bid, certainly above the current share price, on behalf of your shareholders?
First, it hasn't been a bid, it was a highly conditional offer. I think that is an important difference. Secondly, we dismiss no bid at all if it has a reasonable value for our shareholders. And if we would ask here in the room, what would your opinion on a size where the company should recommend to shareholders to take that, I think I would get very different opinions. And you can be assured that I talked to all major shareholders about the bid. Clearly, I cannot talk about the numbers specifically, but just referring to the statement, the bid was the first bid, opportunistic, fundamentally undervalued the company, and highly conditional. And the second bid, which came at a different time, maybe the share price was where it is. I don't know where it's now exactly, but it has been around 100. We left out the word opportunistic, but we stayed with the two other descriptions of that. And that's all what I can say. If there is a bid which would create value for shareholders, we're totally open. As I said, we're open to all options, but it must create value at the end. And if we don't see that, then we will go for other options, what we did in that case.
The share price performance hasn't kept up with even inflation. What does create value in the group? You've talked about long-term changes, but at the moment, we've in real terms gone backwards in the last few years.
As we said, we are disappointed about the results of last year. And if you look into the trend we're talking about the year before, the share price went up to 155. That was a different scenario, but so we didn't deliver now. And with all the discussion which has been there, we are with the share price where we are. The question is, does the share price reflect the inherent value of the company? Would it, for example, suggest that you do fire sales of businesses where at the end you end up, when you take out the debt and when you take out the deficit in the pension schemes, where you even diminish the value of shareholders even when the share price is around £1? But one thing is clear, we're not satisfied where that is, and we will do our best and work hard
to get a better delivery of value of our shareholders.
Hi there. Could you just say whether your Tramlink operations were profitable in the year, and if so, what they generated, please?
I think we can say that they, from an operational perspective, they were marginally. And you know, as you can expect, we've had a lot of costs going through that with the investigations that have been going on. But yeah, marginally from an operational perspective, yes. Was that the entire question, Alex? Yeah, okay.
I just wanted to ask, so obviously when Apollo came in, it's something you do constantly. You're reviewing the business in the five different areas. I mean, one of the issues that's been raised in the past is whether the group is almost too big for one management team, and so whether that's something you looked at. And clearly today you're announcing you're looking at Greyhound. You've got external consultants in. I was wondering whether you'd be able to talk about any of the other things that you looked at maybe as a management team, and you said, okay, you know, we're not going to explore that. That doesn't make sense. But, you know, launching this review on Greyhound does make sense. Can you maybe talk about some of the other things you've looked at as well? Thank you.
As I said, we're looking, either the board and the management, constantly, you know, into strategies. There are specific strategies to businesses, but clearly you also have to look, and the board is doing that, at the overall portfolio. And what you say, is it complex? Are there really synergies between the businesses and so on? What I'm just saying is we have now the opportunity, because also of changes in the overall environment, to take a fresh look into everything, including the portfolio. But the fresh look does not mean that we come right away to direct conclusions on that. I have said in Greyhound, you know, Greyhound is a specific study what we're doing. You can be sure we're looking into other divisions in a similar way. We don't need always external consultants for that. But I'm confident that in the not-too-distant future, you will hear about the steps we are taking. But it must not mean that we tear the whole portfolio apart. But if you look at the slide which I showed, the pie chart, you can group it in very different ways. And clearly we're looking at that without saying, telling you now any details of that. But we still have to see that we are a group with all the obligations in relation to the debt we have, in relation to the pensions we have, and everything what we decide also on the portfolio would have to make sense that at the end there is more value for shareholders than it is today.
Sorry, just thanks for that answer. This is a totally separate one. On the UK bus side, would you be able to say how much of the profit improvement is potentially coming from actually closing some of the loss-making businesses you may have had in the portfolio? And then I was just curious about the point you were making about we're creating a shared service center, and I think in the past one of the problems has been potentially kind of an ivory tower sort of mentality. So could you just outline exactly what will be run locally and what will be run sort of centrally?
Yeah, so to comment on your point about the what the impact of things like the closures were, that's probably 25-30% of the total 20 million that we've saved. Okay, other issues around, so that sort of pure, you know, closing a depot or closing a, you know, particular part, you know, part of the business that's not making money. Other parts have been around, you know, network rationalization, pricing, and then these kind of administrative cost savings that we're doing. So this is, you know, this is running this division in a way that just minimizes the back office. We use very old systems in our UK bus business. Very old process, lots of manual spreadsheets and bits of paper flying around, all this kind of stuff is very, very antiquated, frankly. This year we put in some new accounting systems that bring it up to I'm going to say, bring it up to the 21st century almost. And that's what we're doing with the shared service center. We're just taking a view of what's administrative, what's not adding any value, what can we do more efficiently, and just put it all in one place. So I'm not sure about your comment on the ivory tower, but you know, this is, we are running this business in a different way. We're running it, all of the actions we take are local to the operating companies, the regions that we're operating in, and the medicine we're applying is specific to the regions that we're operating in. Where we can take an opportunity to, you know, group the business together and just run things more efficiently, recruitment, you know, those kind of things, HR, we will do that.
I got one more. I was just so the slide on the trying to cut the business different ways, and obviously this year is not a great year. That's fine. You know, we'll go from there. But the road business return on capital of 6.8%, I think, under your calculation. A, realistically, where can that get to? And B, realistically, over what time frame would you expect it to get there? So what should we actually be measuring the board and the management against on a kind of five-year view?
Yeah, so, I mean, we would expect to be able to improve that, you know, at least by 100 basis points, maybe more. And, in fact, if you look at our incentives, you can see, you know, where we were. You know, I think we were 5.2 last year. This is before some of the write-offs. So we have to change some of that. But we're challenging ourselves to, you know, stretch 150 basis points improvement in return on capital employed, and what we're seeking to do is get it up very much towards our WACC, and sort of looking at the high sixes and sevens type approach. Well, look, we're running it as fast as possible. I mean, we think if we can get student moving, that's the biggest business, and we think we're going to get some better performance this year. You know, within 2-3 years, we should be able to improve it. I mean, what's great is that, you know, student, we got back to adding value last year. We had a bad year this year, but it's a good, strong business. UK Bus has got some good momentum, and if we can continue with the sort of the revenue growth, even at that sort of low 0.5%, 1%, and the cost savings, then those two big parts of the business are going to drive it forward. So, you know, within sort of 2-3 years, we should be able to see the benefits of that coming through. But, you know, one step at a time.
Your biggest competitor in student talks about the opportunity in charter as a kind of low capital, high return opportunity. It's not something that you kind of talk greatly about. Is that not part of the equation looking forward?
It's part of the equation. I mean, again, you've got to remember that we're double the size of our biggest competitor, and we've been doing this for a while. I mean, our charter business is $200 million, so we're not small. We do both types of charter: the student charter, which is kind of the games after school and going off to camps, and then we do the outside charter bit, which is, you know, you want to hire a bus to go to a wedding or whatever, it's that kind of thing. But it's a big business, so a couple of hundred million. You know, we'll come up every year with a, and we don't talk about it because the biggest part of our business is just we've got to get the main part working. But, you know, we're supplying the buses to the Super Bowl, we're supplying buses to the PGA tournaments, all this kind of stuff. It's a good source of capacity utilization at reasonable margins. Again, without getting into too much detail, you know, we're continuing to improve our performance in that area, and yeah, they're right, and we're right. We'll carry on wanting to improve that business. It's a big marketplace. We just can't talk about everything, I suppose. Yeah. Great.
Okay, so all that remains is for us to thank you very much for joining us here today. Thank you.
Thank you.